So what do you need for good health care? You need a patient and you need a health care provider. Along comes the middleman to facilitate, and it becomes the primary entity. And that's why it costs so much and we get so little. The insurance companies pay pennies on the dollar for the billing. We don't have the best health care, but we have the most expensive health care.
Is about more than just a regular gym routine. When was the last time you checked on your financial fitness? If you're feeling like you're falling behind, Ed Sedell is here to help with The Retirement Trainer, a podcast about helping you get into better financial shape. Every week, Ed talks about things you need to know to become more financially fit for your future. Learn about things like how much money will you need, financial mistakes other people often make, and how you can avoid them. Plus, details on The Retirement Fitness Plan, a plan Ed personally created to help you get to and through retirement by focusing on five key areas of your financial life. Learn more about The Retirement Fitness Plan when you visit egsifinancial.com and click on processes. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to The Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer.
Dr. Carson, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Well, good. Well, thank you for coming back on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Well, good, good. How have you been? You've been busy.
Oh, my goodness. It's been ridiculous.
I mean, you've been doing a whole lot of things, even more than just your foundation. So what all have you been involved in over the last year?
Well, I've been doing a lot of Turning Point USA events at universities and other types of speaking engagements. Carson Scholars Fund. We've had a whole bunch of banquets across the country recently, opening reading rooms. And then I sit on several boards. So it keeps me busy.
Wow. Yeah. There you go. It keeps you out of trouble, right?
Absolutely. And of course, we just started the faith office at the White House.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was opened last week. And Dan Patrick, the lieutenant governor of Texas, will be the chair, and I'll be the vice chair. And we'll be looking at religious liberty issues throughout the country.
Well, that is awesome. So where do you think that that's going to take you when you talk about religious liberties from universities and what we're seeing, you know, not just in New York, but all around the country? Is that going to be your focus, or is it going to be?
The whole gamut. You know, you remember the protesters in front of the abortion clinic?
Mm-hmm.
They weren't blocking anybody. They weren't violent. And yet they were put in jail. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
We need to stand up for freedom of thought and freedom of speech.
Even if we disagree. I mean, that's right.
Especially if we disagree.
Absolutely. You need to and should want to hear opposing views. So I completely agree. Absolutely. So you guys just opened up the office. When does that actually start? Have you already started engaging in that?
The charter is being put together. Probably the first meeting will be next month.
Wow. Wow. So you guys are going to be off and running.
Absolutely. But, you know, I think the whole country is kind of waking up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, recognizing that our founding document, the Declaration of Independence, says that our rights come from our Creator, not from the government. And there are principles espoused in the Bible and in Judeo-Christian philosophy. Love your neighbor. Not cancel your neighbor if they have a different yard sign.
Very, very true. So we actually had our men's group this morning, and, you know, we were actually kind of discussing this. And so it's poignant that you're actually bringing this up, because we were talking about, you know, being intentional and listening to opposing points of view. And not being afraid to express ours, because I think there for a while, people were afraid to express their points of views. You know,
intimidation is a principal tool of Marxists. Have done a very good job. And you can't be the land of the free if you're not the home of the brave.
So true. So true. And I'm going to kind of shift gears a little bit too, because there's been a lot of things. So in our business, right, I mean, it's wealth, and for us, it's health and wealth. They kind of go hand in hand. And obviously, you being a very well-known, world-renowned doctor, I do have to ask, the MAHA movement, we're a huge proponent, you know, the processed foods, food dyes, you know, a lot of the things in the foods, they've negatively affected our families. We actually have a child that is on the spectrum. You would never know it now, but still, it took a lot of work to get him where he is today, for sure. But what are your thoughts on the MAHA movement? Because things continue to change, and it seems like things are going in the right direction for all of Americans.
Well, I'm delighted to see the MAHA movement and to see it really picking up momentum right now. All you have to do is look at what's going on in our country. You know, a third of our children have some type of chronic illness. You know, you mentioned the autism spectrum. Think about the fact that a few decades ago, we were talking about 1 to 4 children in 10,000. Now we're talking about 1 in 31. Something's going on, and it's environmental, and it may be multifactorial.
Right.
But we really need to be investigating that with some urgency and figuring out how do we keep things from being so severe in terms of our illnesses. We spend all of our time trying to fix the illness rather than prevent the illness. Sort of like you're taking a baseball bat and beating people with it and saying, how can we heal the bruises? How about just stop beating them with the baseball bat?
You got to stop using common sense, right?
Exactly.
And that's a really good point. We're seeing obesity in children at its highest rate. I took a class and I was watching videos and it was showing, well, the American population, but kids in particular in the 50s and 60s and even early 70s. And the change, the physical structure of the bodies from then until now, it's completely different. And it's an epidemic, this obesity. And now, you know, GLP-1s, instead of fixing the problem, we're trying to curb the symptom, I think is probably a better way of saying it.
And then we also need to recognize something that we used to know. That is, you cannot gain weight if your calories out exceeds your calories in.
Right.
It just doesn't happen. Some people say, I got a gland problem. They do. Their salivary gland.
Well, I mean, you remember, you know, growing up, you had PE all the way through 12th grade and now in high school. So I've got 3 boys. One has graduated from college. The other 2 are in college right now. But in high school, I think they only had to take 1 semester of PE. And I remember actually having to climb the rope in middle school. And it was completely different then than it is now. And I think we need to have that, you know, physical activity, you know, especially with boys, the epidemic of ADD and ADHD. I don't know if that's actually overdiagnosed or not. That's kind of not my bailiwick. That's kind of more on yours. But it just seems like it doesn't make sense.
Well, you know, I used to have so many parents come in and say, the pediatrician has recommended that we put him on this drug or this drug for his ADHD. And I asked them a few questions. I said, can they watch television? Oh, yeah, for hours and hours. And I said, can they play video games all day long? I said, well, let's do this before you put them on the drug. Over the next 3 months, wean them off of those things and substitute quality time with you reading and discussing the material. And in 3 months, if they still need it, then let's talk about it. The vast majority did not need it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Growing up, it was, you know, on Saturday mornings, you would leave right after breakfast and, you know, come home at dark. You may come home for lunch, but I mean, you were outside the whole time. Now, the dynamic has changed, you know, because of these things right here and video games and everything else. And so between the lack of physical activity and honestly processed foods, that's a double whammy on people's health.
You know, do we want to be healthy people? Do we want to create a good future for our children?
You know, there's that saying, and I'm not going to get it right, but people have, you know, 1,000 wishes and 1,000 dreams. But those who don't have their health only have 1 wish, right? And that's to be healthy. And it doesn't matter. You could have all the money in the world, but if you're not healthy, what's it matter? And we're seeing an increase of cancer rates that have personally actually affected our family, our friends. Like I don't ever remember seeing this when I was growing up. I think it has to be environmental based, obviously, but also it's got to have a lot to do with our food.
Oh, there's no question about it, because there are places in the world where we have much fewer incidents of this. Now, there is a blue zone in the United States. There are 5 blue zones in the world. Those are places where you have a significant number of the population who live to be 100 or more. And we have one such place in the United States. And it's a place where there's a tremendous emphasis on diet, exercise, and healthful living.
Where's that blue zone at?
That's in San Bernardino County, California.
Really?
Where Loma Linda is located. And there's a large number of Seventh-day Adventists there, the vast majority of whom are vegetarians. They don't smoke, they don't drink, they don't put harmful substances into their bodies. They concentrate on physical activity. And, you know, you learn in medical school that there are certain groups of people who live 7 to 10 years longer than everybody else. It's a lifestyle issue.
I do agree with that. We see, even with those people that we serve, and as well as friends, those that, you know, I always say motion is lotion, right? Those who stay active can continue to be active. And those that are eating healthy or try to eat healthy, but it is so hard. I mean, you read the back of the packages and it's not a 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 ingredient thing on the contents. Most of it, I can't even pronounce, right? It's, and you know, folic acid, I didn't even realize that that's not natural. I mean, that's chemically based. That's, you can't find that anywhere on the earth. And so trying to not just stay active, but to eat healthy, if you don't have a food source where you can go right from the pasture to the table, right? From the farm, whether it's the cows or the chickens or the hogs, the same thing with milk. Honestly, you really don't know what's in it.
I always say, if everybody ate 3 well-balanced meals a day, drank 6 to 8 glasses of water, got a full night's sleep on a regular basis, exercised regularly, and didn't put harmful substances in their bodies, most people in medicine would be out of business. Having said that, medicine is a great career because they're not going to do it.
Well, like you said, it's got that, unfortunately, that built-in client base. So let me ask you this. I know that with RFKJ, they already tried to remove some of the food dyes. Do you think that there is a possibility that we can actually, as a matter of law, make food healthier for Americans again and get rid of a lot of the health issues that we're currently seeing? It's not going to be overnight. I think it's going to be a long time coming. But do you think that that's even going to be a possibility?
I don't know if it should be a matter of law, but it should be a matter of informing people. People need to know what they're doing and be able to make choices. Now, when it comes to things like school lunch programs, where you have some real jurisdiction, should be serving healthy food to our kids. I mean, that's a no-brainer. And, you know, when it comes to using food stamps, you know, the SNAP program, there should be some restrictions. You know, we shouldn't be able to use that to buy alcohol, to buy cigarettes, to buy foods that we know are harmful. That should be a no-brainer. We shouldn't even be talking about that.
Yeah, I didn't even realize once the MAHA movement really started to gain steam, I guess it was really almost a year ago, last summer, towards the end of last summer, and it was one revelation after another. I didn't even realize that you could buy sugar-infused drinks, whether it's, everyone keeps talking about Coca-Cola, but then you have Gatorade, the amount of sugar content in Gatorade and some of these other quote-unquote sports drinks. It's just
those are some of the biggest culprits when it comes to sugar and the fat that's accumulating, the overweight situation that's going on. It's very easy to take those calories in without really thinking about it.
Absolutely.
And you think, you know, I'm eating okay. But if you're drinking a soda along with that food, you really haven't done yourself any favors.
Right.
I'm not a Scrooge who says you can never have a soda or ice cream cone. But, you know, be smart about it and recognize if you're going to do it, build into your schedule some time to exercise.
I had my first donut since right around Thanksgiving. And it wasn't even a full donut yesterday. It was a piece of a donut. One of our team members, there's a local bakery and they keep bringing them in. I'm like, no. And it just smelled so good. It was maple. It had a piece of bacon on it. So I made sure I got the piece that, right? But yeah, you know, you do every once in a while, you have to reward yourself. But, you know, eating two or three of those donuts every day, that's a can of Coke or a couple cans of Coke a day. And I do know people that drink 3, 4, 5 cans of Coke every single day. And it's crazy. Or they get one of those big super 44-ounce super gulps or whatever you want to call them. I can't even imagine how much sugar is in that. I really don't want to imagine how much sugar is in that.
And also, when food is prepared the right way, particularly fresh food, mm-hmm. I don't know if you've had a fresh tomato off the vine.
Yes.
Or fresh sweet corn on the cob. It's a different food. It is so
completely different. Yeah. So my wife, she always teases me. She goes, I can't believe you don't like tomatoes. I'm like, they taste like rubber. They really do. So we started growing them years ago and you can actually pick them and eat them. It's almost like an apple. They're so good. The skin is so soft. You're so right. It's completely different from corn to the broccoli to the, I mean, everything, even the herbs. You know, growing your own herbs. My wife has made a big push. We go in and we get cows every year and free range chickens, and we know where we're getting them from and the food tastes better. And our boys are always like, ooh, this is the good meat, isn't it? I'm like, yes, it is. You can taste the difference, right? And you can see it too. It's crazy.
Well, hopefully we don't make this just a transient trend. Hopefully we make this a permanent part of who we are as a nation.
Well, you know what? Me too. You know, talking about being a transient trend, these GLP-1s, you've heard so many things on them where once you start, you can't get off. And now they're actually trying to introduce them to not just adolescents, but, you know, young children. What are the dangers in those? Instead of just eating healthy, trying to use a substitute instead of changing your behavior?
Well, you know, we haven't done the long-range studies. So we really don't know what impact they will have in the long run. I'm afraid we may be finding out some dangerous things. And the thing that a lot of people don't know about the GLP-1s is that they don't have a permanent effect on you. You have to keep taking them. And so it's a real boon for the industries who are making these things. They want you to start on because they got you for life. Unless you want to gain the weight back.
And isn't that drug also approved by Medicaid as well? I think it is. And maybe I'm talking off out of turn here, but I think it is. So we're almost, you know, as a country, as Americans, again, not a Republican or Democrat thing, but as Americans, instead of fixing the problem, we're just helping curb the symptom.
Right. We're becoming a medical fixing machine rather than one that prevents things from happening. And we have the ability to do it. We just have been focused in the wrong way. And when we look at other countries that don't allow a lot of the things that we are putting in our foods, we should be asking ourselves, why is that? Why don't we pay attention to what's going on in other parts of the world? It's sort of like with COVID. You know, why didn't we pay attention to the fact that along the western coast of Africa, they had very little COVID? Why didn't we ask ourselves, why is that? And we would have discovered it's because they take hydroxychloroquine as an anti-malarial.
Really? So, okay.
Yeah, they have 94% less COVID than we did because it's a very effective anti-malarial. But obviously, as we've subsequently discovered, it was very effective against COVID as well.
How about that? I had not heard that, but I did hear that combined with ivermectin was a huge, not just therapeutic, but also a preventative as well.
Yeah. And in fact, the FDA had a rule in place that said they could not issue an EUA, an emergency use authorization for the vaccine, if there were other viable treatments. And therefore, they had to basically denigrate the other things that were available so that they could say there's no other viable treatment. In the meantime, hundreds of thousands of people died needlessly.
Yes, and separated from the families, you know, during that time as well, which was just a one tragedy after another, it seems like.
It's going to take a long time to get the people to believe in the public health system again.
So what do you think, because I have noticed that there has been a, for lack of a better term, maybe a trust factor, you know, even with, you know, your a lot of family docs and all the way across the country, just talking with friends of ours. So what do you think needs to happen in order to restore that trust?
Well, transparency has to come back. And I think, you know, we need to have a completely different system when it comes to taking care of people's health. We spend over $13,000 per year per person per capita. That's more than most concierge practices cost. So what do you need for good health care? You need a patient and you need a healthcare provider. Along comes the middleman to facilitate, and it becomes the primary entity, controlling the other two and sucking most of the money out of the system. And that's why it costs so much and we get so little. We don't have the best healthcare, but we have the most expensive healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
We have a relatively simple solution. We need to have people put skin in the game. There's no skin in the game the way it works now. It's sort of like you go to a hotel, put your credit card down, and they say, well, you don't need this. All your expenses are taken care of. Oh, well, where's the room service menu? Whereas if you have to pay for it, you say, is there a McDonald's nearby? We don't have any of that. And as a result of that, we don't have any transparency and we have a lot of games being played. The insurance companies pay pennies on the dollar for the billing. So the hospitals and the clinics, they escalate the cost way beyond where it should be. All kind of gamesmanship going on here. If we had things like health savings accounts, mm-hmm. which would cost us a lot less money, then that would automatically bring transparency into the system. And you just modify it a little bit so that a person in your family could give you money out of their health savings account. Let's say you had a procedure and you were $500 short. Your wife could give you $500 out of hers, or your cousin or your son. Every family would become their own insurance company. And everybody would care about each other. If Uncle Charlie was smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day, everybody would hide the cigarettes. And then you make it possible to transfer that health savings account to someone at the end of your life rather than it just disappearing. Because right now we're spending 40% of healthcare dollars in the last 6 months of life. That's foolishness.
I mean, cost transparency, that's kind of a huge deal because there is none. You can go into a facility based on the coverage that you have and pay X amount. I can go in to the exact same facility to get the exact same procedure or test run or whatever it is and pay a different price. And you don't even know what that is, and they won't tell you and they can't tell you because there's zero transparency. And I think if we were able to enact or enable transparency, and that's by demand, right? If people had to pay, they would start requiring, hey, how much does this cost? Instead of just going to the ER, knowing that every time you go, someone's going to pick it up and it's not going to be you.
And your doctor's not going to order 5 CAT scans just to see how things are going.
Yeah.
If it was coming out of your
head. Well, you know, let's do another CAT scan. Oh, wait, you know, you're feeling pain. Let's get an MRI. Well, you know, that didn't come out good. So let's do another one. We were just talking about this last night with some friends. You know, the amount of MRIs and things, it's ridiculous. It just seems like, well, I'm over my deductible now, so it doesn't really matter. It does. When you went to med school, was nutrition ever part of the training? And if not, do you think that should be going forward?
It certainly should be. There was very little mention of nutrition at all. And I don't think there's very much mention of it even now, even with us talking about MAHA. So it's time to really integrate that into what we're doing, because preventive healthcare will save us an incredible amount of money. And we can't keep going down this road. We're spending ourselves into oblivion. And I admire the fact that Doge and some others are looking at how we can save money, but that should have been going on for a long time. And if we don't stop it and we go bankrupt, all of those people who are complaining now, they have no idea how much they're going to be complaining if our country goes bankrupt and China becomes the reserve currency of the world.
You're exactly right. And especially those at or in retirement and seniors. I mean, they're affected the most. And everyone's afraid, you know, you brought up DOGE, they're going to cut our benefits. They're reducing Medicare spending. I think it's important for people to maybe even put it in a perspective. It's not that they're reducing benefits. They're just getting rid of the waste, the fraud, and the abuse. And I think that transparency, so that everyone knows what the real cost is, because I don't think anyone really knows. Is it $675 or is it $2,500 for that MRI? Because, you know, someone's paying this, someone's paying that, and a whole lot of people are paying in between. So, I mean, what is the real cost? And until we start seeing those changes, I don't think we're ever going to know. And that's important, especially with folks on fixed budgets at retirement, living off of pension and Social Security. And let's face it, majority of Americans, their only retirement is Social Security. So the single biggest cost to them is their healthcare and Medicare. So this is a big deal. I think it's epidemic from a financial perspective because, like you said, I didn't realize 40% in the last stages of their life, those are real numbers.
Those are big numbers. And it needs courageous people to tackle it because it's much easier just to kick it down the road and let somebody else deal with it. But I think it's been kicked about as far down the road as it can go without us going off the cliff.
I agree. Something does have to be done. But you know, the reality is, number one, nobody wants to feel any kind of a pain. Someone else is going to worry about it. So we keep kicking that can down the road. But like you said, we're going to get to a point that bubble, it's about ready to pop. And so we all have to decide, do we want to kind of embrace the suck, right? And for a short term and kind of get back on the rails or continue going off the rails until we crash?
We're kind of fortunate to have a president who can't run again.
They're not worried about reelection. Absolutely. Yep.
That's good.
If we could really start getting Congress to start doing their job and term limits, and I mean, there's a whole host of things. I won't get on that soapbox. I think we could talk for days on that by itself. And not worry so much about fundraising and being reelected again and actually start representing their constituency.
You know, when our founders put a system together, they didn't anticipate that people would make it a career. They thought people would come and serve for a couple of years and go back and doing what they were doing. But we've made it so lucrative for people, and they don't want to leave once they get in there. We really should find a way to change that system and put real term limits in. House people have to run every other year. They spend half their time raising money so that they can run rather than dealing with the issues that they were elected to deal with.
You're exactly right. And I've seen it personally, firsthand, where before someone, right after they were elected, before literally days after they were elected to Congress, they were doing a fundraiser for the reelection in 2 years. I was shocked. I tell people that story all the time. I was floored and I was like, this is the problem right here. Instead of focusing on the task at hand, which is serving the American population and their district, they're too busy trying to raise money.
I would love to see just one term you couldn't run again. You can lengthen that term, make it a long term, 6, 8, or 10 years, but you can't run again, but you can be recalled every other year. So if you're doing a terrible job, the people can get rid of you, but you can't run again.
It's funny. I was just going to ask what happens if, yeah. So that's a great way to look at it. All right. So we've been talking about MAHA and health and the impact financially that it has, not just on the country, but individuals. The big topic right now is AI. And so, you know, I'm going to try and relate this to health. I'm going to use Neuralink as an example because that's already been used on humans. What are your thoughts on that as far as helping with health issues? Do you think it's a good thing? What are the good, the bad, and the ugly? What do you see as far as AI and those tools like a Neuralink?
Well, you can't put the genie back in a bottle. It's out now. So what we need to do is concentrate on how do we control it in an appropriate way. It's going to be a tremendous advantage to us in terms of being analyzed data and come up with conclusions. It'll be phenomenal. You know, the whole human genome thing, when it was switched into the realm of computer science, it accelerated massively. those are the same kinds of things we're going to be finding out about diseases. We'll be able to determine who is likely to get a disease long before they get it and what measures should be taken to prevent that from happening. It's going to be incredible. There's no question about it. But as with everything else, people who are non-scrupulous will find ways to use it in a nefarious way in order to enrich themselves.
Well, yeah, and that's part of my fear from looking at the good part. And correct me if I'm way off base here, but from an efficiency standpoint, because AI can help with the diagnosis and the prognosis and make doctors' lives easier and make things a little bit more preventative, do you think, in my mind's eye, I think that maybe there's also a possibility, if used correctly, we could actually lower the cost of healthcare. Do you think that that's a possibility?
Absolutely. In terms of improving efficiency, a massive advantage if we use it the right way. And I think we will. You know, I have confidence in us, but there'll be some pain along the way. We'll have to deal with it. And we have to be logical and we have to be smart. And our country is a little different than most other countries in the world. And I think it's because of our Judeo-Christian foundation. We have some morals and some values that perhaps are not ubiquitous in other places. And I think that is what is saving us. I firmly believe that it was God who saved President Trump. And if he had not done so, can you imagine where we would be? What would be going on? I shudder to think about it. Packing the Supreme Court, completely open borders, changing the laws so that they remain in power forever. I just shudder to think what would have happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something as simple as the open borders. You're not a country when you have an open border, by definition. And the irony is, the most recent comment from the president of Mexico, she said, you know, we are a sovereign state and you're not to cross our borders. But yet it's okay to have the U.S. open. And every other country, they're a sovereign nation and they enforce their borders. So I think that in and of itself, and to have it down by, was it 99%? They've reduced the inflow. I mean, it's almost completely shut down, which is...
In 7 weeks. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
And the impact, the financial impact on the strain, I mean, just on our healthcare system, on Medicaid, and the impact that that has on our seniors for Medicare, because they're eating up all the money. So, I mean, and the impact just keeps going on and on.
Yeah, but again, I do believe that we will overcome this with logic, common sense, and faith. And at some point, I think a lot of the people on the left will come to realize that that's not who we are. The hateful people who are trying to drive wedges in between our society on the basis of race, age, income, gender, religion, political affiliation. That's not who we are. That's the typical playbook for Marxism. Divide and control the populace. And if you look at the things that are going on, if you just read Saul Alinsky's book, Rules for Radicals, you can see all those things happening in our society right now.
Yes.
If you go back and you look at the congressional record, January the 10th, 1963, Congressman Hurlong of Florida wrote in the 45 Goals of Communism, how they would gain control of the United States. You would be amazed at all the things that have happened already, gaining control of the public school system and the teacher union so you can indoctrinate the kids. We're seeing the manifestation of that on many of our college campuses now, gaining control of television and the news media so that you could change the moral fabric of the country, denigrating the family, particularly the role of fathers in the family, denigrating the church and the Bible, making sexual perversion normal, natural, and healthy. I mean, you just go right down the list and you see that their goal, since they can't overcome us militarily, is to attack our faith and our families and to destroy us from within.
Destroy the family unit. Make it irrelevant, unfortunately. Again, in our men's group, we were talking about men as leaders. We need to be first leaders in our home, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's what we're called to do so that we can then be you know, leaders in our community and as well as our church and then in the nation. And I think we kind of lost sight of that, but we have seen a resurgence since last August. Bible sales are up significantly. It's more common. We were talking about one of those singing shows, American Idol, where the whole show for a couple hours was all faith-based music and people were professing their faith, national broadcast. And I don't think we would have seen that a year ago. So I think things are turning in the right direction.
Going around to the various universities to see the enthusiasm of the students now. There was a time when they were kind of hide in the shadows and they didn't want anybody to know that they were conservative or logical people. And now they wear their hats and they proudly stand up for what they believe in. And that's becoming more and more of a phenomenon. A lot of places where you can't even get all the kids into the auditorium. They have to turn some of them away.
And I would like to get to a point where we're just Americans, wishful thinking and a lot of hope and faith that that'll happen instead of liberals and conservatives, so that instead of being at each other, we really are, we have a common goal. We may agree to disagree and that's okay, but we're not at each other's throats. And I think that has a lot to do with just leadership, willing to stand up and say, okay, enough is enough. And we're seeing that through every facet, even AI. When you put something into AI now, as compared to a year ago, the same response, it's already started to change. You know, those algorithms, because obviously those algorithms were human input, but you can even see a change there as well.
Yeah. I think we are moving in the right direction. And we just have to keep being persistent.
I guess one of the things, you know, AI, the good thing is, right, that we're talking about lowering cost and the advancement of medicines and even those that are quadriplegic and paraplegic, being able to do things and function that they couldn't before. But I guess one of the things, one of the moral things that scare me is someone being able to, and I don't know if I'm way off base here or not, but someone being able to put thoughts into my head. I think that's where my moral dilemma is with these implants.
Yeah. Well, that's a frightening thought. There's no question about it. And there are people who don't necessarily have a moral compass that would prevent them from doing that. So we just have to be ready to counter it when it occurs.
Yeah. And I think if we keep going down the path of using it for good, because I agree with you, I have a lot of faith in mankind, especially in the direction that we're heading and being able to use it for good in the advancement of medicine all the way across the board, I think it's going to help the populace in ways that we maybe never even thought possible.
Absolutely. It's all good.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Carson, I know you're so busy, but I really wanted to thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's been a great conversation and thank you very much. I hope we get to have you back on soon.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. And thanks for being a patriot.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, sir. You too. Okay. All right. Take care.
Hey, when was the last time you tested your fitness level? Not your workout routine. I'm talking about your financial endurance. Because if saving to a 401k is the extent of your effort, it is time for you to start shaping up. And Ed Sedell is here to help you do that with The Retirement Trainer. It's his podcast to help you examine your financial stamina and learn the questions you should be asking and areas to focus on to help you get to that place you've been working so hard for, a happy, comfortable retirement. And it's not as hard as some might have made you believe. Ed's broken it down into 5 simple steps. It's the Retirement Fitness Plan, which he personally created to help clarify key areas of your financial life. Learn more about the Retirement Fitness Plan at egsifinancial.com. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to The Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. Investment advisory services offered through EGSI Investment Management, DBA EGSI Financial Group, a registered investment advisor. Insurance and annuities offered through EGSI Financial Services, Inc., Ohio License Number 102-0619. We'll be right back.